Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today we have a return visit by one of my favorite techies, Jeremy Lichtness, who is a technical project manager and consultant with Wintellect. He's the author of Designing Silverlight Business Apps and the forthcoming Designing Windows 8 Metro Apps with C# and XAML. Jeremy, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Excited to be here. Glad to talk to you again, Jesse.
Good to have you back. And I have a whole lot of questions to ask you. Let's start with, what does a technical project manager and consultant do for Wintellect?
That's a good question. I always like to add the technical to the front of that, because when I say project manager, people instantly think of, you know, I'm inside MS Project and doing planning and high level. But at Wintellect, we're a pretty unique organization. We focus on the Microsoft stack. Our projects are very heavy into all technologies across that stack, including Windows 8, but also MVC on the web and so forth. So technical project manager, I'm really in charge of delivery of projects. And some of those projects involves me being very hands-on, involved in the architecture and the development of that. In other projects, it's working with some of our other consultants that we have on staff and just keeping pace with them, providing guidance and overall interfacing with the customer.
Okay, fair enough. Your book, Designing Silverlight Business Apps, I think was a huge hit with a lot of folks. And I, for one, am looking forward, even though it competes with a book that I am putatively writing, but I am looking forward to seeing your Designing Windows 8 Metro Apps with C# and XAML. How's that coming along?
That's coming along great. Obviously, you know, one of the risks that you take on when you're writing about a technology that's forthcoming is the changes that happen before it's released to the general public. So I had that happen with my Silverlight 5 book. To get it out in time for that release, I had to start it quite a bit earlier, and some things change internally, and that's just that software. You know, nothing wrong with that as they make changes to improve it and get it right. But that's one of the most interesting aspects, I think, about writing this book was watching the changes from the developer preview through the consumer preview through the release preview. I think they're all positive changes, but it definitely was a little bit more of a rework than I had anticipated going into it. But it's moving along, and we're still on schedule to get it out there in the fall in time for hopefully when this whole Windows 8 platform is going to go live in public.
How big were the changes from the consumer preview to the release preview?
The changes really evolve around the templates. So if you look at changes, I think a lot of these changes weren't in the deeper technological underpinnings. I think Microsoft did a great job of improving the project templates so that there's a lot more done out of the box. But at the same token, they also did some small things that just have a bigger impact, like renaming certain themes and styles. So it's a question of going through and either wiring up the new names or kind of retemplating. So most of what I've run into so far, the code itself hasn't been impacted so much as just the templates and some of the resources, which is a good thing, especially if you write, you know, well-contained code. It makes it easier to bring it forward.
The benefits of writing well-factored code.
Yes, absolutely.
What's the theme of your book? Is it going to be an overall introduction to Metro programming, or are you targeting a specified audience?
So I'm targeting more of the introduction audience with this book. And to give you a little bit of history, when I finished Designing Silverlight Business Applications, and that was focused very much on the enterprise and business, had conversations with my publisher about Windows 8. And, writing a line of business book about Windows 8 really doesn't make sense now because it's consumer focused. And I think there's a level of maturity that it'll have to get to before people start to figure out what makes sense in the enterprise. So my first notion for the book was to have this huge book that hit every single topic and went front to back. But the problem is that type of challenge when you're also working full time and doing other activities. I do spend time with my family, for example. People ask me about that. So it would have taken a long time to write, and we didn't want to bite off, you know, more than we could chew. So what I decided to do was turn it into two projects. The first project, giving all the fundamentals someone needs, and this is targeted at, you know, developers who haven't touched Windows 8 yet and want to learn how to get applications into that Windows 8 app store, or developers who are really just picking it up for the first time and are looking at the Windows 8 platform. It's not a beginner's book for someone off the street who hasn't touched programming. I'm expecting that people understand programming concepts, and there will be a benefit of understanding and knowing XAML and C Sharp. But that's really the target is, hey, look, there's developers out there doing web development, MVC development. If you've used C Sharp and the .NET framework, this book is going to bridge that gap and give everything needed to get a Windows 8 application complete. And then what I'll do is follow on with another book that's more advanced and gets into a lot of the deeper, intricate details of the platform.
Great. And who is the publisher?
Publisher is Addison Wesley Professional, so they're an imprint of Pearson.
Okay. Yeah, the keeping track of who's an imprint of whom and who has purchased which company could keep you up on that.
Yeah, exactly.
So this puts you in a good position to talk about your impressions of Windows 8 overall.
It does. And, I have a very positive impression. I've seen a lot of critique and a lot of angst, and it's been interesting to follow because before Build, which was September of last year when the development preview was released, the developer preview, there was a lot of speculation about what Windows 8 would be. Is .NET going away? Is Silverlight going to die? Are we only going to be able to write and manage code or just in HTML? So it was interesting to see that unfold. So like everyone else, when I downloaded that preview and started working with it, I said, what are we going to see here? And what I found and what I believe is here's a pretty ambitious undertaking, right, is marrying this existing Windows experience we have through Windows 7 with a desktop-centric approach with the idea of touch first, so a touch tablet. And I think they did a great job of melding it. I think a lot of the frustration that I hear comes from this concept of the dual personality, if you will, that, it's a desktop or it's touch. But I'll tell you what, in my experience, I said, doesn't make sense to write about this unless I'm using it. So the first thing I did was for the book, I got a Samsung Series 7 Slate, which is what they gave out at the Build event. I wasn't at that event. I watched it. So I got that device, and I've been writing and building code with that device. So I've been, building it on Windows 8. The other thing I did was, obviously, a tablet isn't ideal for writing a lot of code. You're not going to use the touch interface. You want to use a keyboard. So I also set up my laptop to dual boot so that I can boot into Windows 8 and just use my large screens and my keyboard. So I'm doing a combination of development on both machines, of writing on both machines. One of the nice features of Windows 8 is that when I'm developing on my laptop, I can still debug to my tablet. So I can use that touch interface on the tablet and play with it on the tablet while I'm debugging from the laptop. So that's a cool feature. But I mean, to make a short story boring, I think a lot of the frustration that I see from people in dealing with the desktop mode is just the move my cheese syndrome, right? Things have moved, but when you get used to them, I'm liking the Windows 8 interface better because I feel like I can get to things a lot faster. If I want to launch Notepad, I hit the Windows key, type N-O and hit Enter, and I'm in Notepad because the Windows key brings up the Start menu, and by default, when you start typing on the Start menu, it performs an application search. So it's really easy, and Sean Wildermuth made a blog post recently about this whole Start menu. Where's my Start menu? And I like the way he spun it because he really said the Start screen in Windows 8 is like a large Start menu that we're used to from Windows 7, but it has a lot richer search functionality. So, I mean, in a nutshell, using it to develop software, to write the book, I've got the full Office Suite installed on Windows 8. There's no compatibility issues. I've enjoyed it. And I actually am looking forward to moving over to that as my primary operating system, but I'm not going to do that until it's released to manufacturing.
One of the questions that I get a lot is, how do you get past the conceptual initial hurdle of Windows 8 and settle down and actually write an application? What's the right way to begin writing for Windows 8. You have any words of wisdom on that?
I've got a book that I'm working on that I think will help. So one of the things that I've noticed that Microsoft has done with this platform, and I really see a lot of intentional work, and I'm impressed by it, is to focus on documentation. So there's extensive online documentation, but everyone knows opening the help guide to, say, the Windows 8 platform, it's like a throwing darts on a board, right? It doesn't give you that fluid A, B, C, D. So you have to have something more than that. Another nice feature that they've added is they have a set of SDK downloads. So with each release, they've provided downloads that is literally an index of features and capabilities that have sample applications. So I know a lot of developers like myself, when I was back in the early days hacking on Commodore 64s, the only way we really learned how to do anything clever was to look at other people's code and maybe dial into a BBS every once in a while. So with this SDK, you know, if you're asking yourself, you know, what's a tile? How does that work? How do I connect to a service? All of those examples are available in all the different languages that are supported. So that's number two. Number three, the templates that are provided out of the box have a ton of functionality. So what I found in the process I've been taking is really going into a template, firing it up, navigating through it, looking at the parts of it, and then slowly evolving from that template to an application, saying, okay, what do I need to do next? Well, I need to connect to a web service. Okay, great. Well, I can look at the networking portion of the documentation and start to explore that. I mean, it's helpful for me because I have access to other resources. We have some projects going on at Winelect where we're building applications that are slated for production when Windows 8 is released. So we've, you know, gained a lot of insights there. But I think for the average person, until these books come out that they have access to that kind of do the 1, 2, 3 guidance, the key is to, there's some blog posts and, you know, obviously my blog, I'll post articles and things like that. But that SDK, I think, is key for really getting your arms around the new framework and seeing the examples and how they work.
And when you say the SDK, you specifically mean the set of examples that come with it.
Right. I should say the SDK examples. I think that's what they call it. So if you search for Windows 8 SDK examples, you'll land on it. It's on the front page on, I think, most search engines.
Okay, and we'll put a link to your blog on the page for the show as well, as obviously there's going to be good information there on Win8 programming as well.
Absolutely.
Are there other blogs that you particularly pay attention to in your Win8 explorations?
Actually, I've spent a lot more time on Microsoft specific blogs. They've been providing a lot of updates, and the way that I keep up with all this information, because on my Twitter feed, and I'll share that link as well, I try to tweet all of the breaking news, but I've got this all aggregated into my reader application, so I don't even see the individual blogs anymore. I just see this big list of articles when I get up first thing in the morning and start going through them. But there's a Windows 8 team blog that provides that, and I can get that link to you so that we can post it. And that provides a lot of information. There's different levels to that. Snofsky has his blog where he gives kind of the high level insights, but there's a developer team blog that provides that. As far as individual blogs, I've really just run into articles. I've got searches set up that dump me onto different blogs, and I just keep picking them up that way.
Great. The book that you're writing on Windows 8 is specifically C# and XAML, and that raises the question right away about the state of XAML and the health of Silverlight and WPF.
It does. And there's a lot of interesting, evolutions there when you talk about that. I mean, one of the large speculations that I saw leading up to the build event was, you know, is Silverlight and WPF dead? And what came out of that on the other side, I think, is there's a general recognition that there probably won't be future releases of Silverlight. There's other technologies. What has been confirmed is that you can still use that technology on Windows 8. So any existing Silverlight WPF applications will run. Furthermore, the .NET framework's been evolved and supports WPF. A new version of that was released, and everyone was so excited about Windows 8. I don't think that got as much publicity, so there's a path there. But what I've been really focused on and interested in is two things specifically. The first is the portable class library. So this was a project that started out as an add-on that you could bring into Visual Studio in previous versions. It's now part of Visual Studio 2012, and we've got to keep up with that because I'm so used to saying Visual Studio 11, and they just changed it on me to 2012, and they took out color, then they put color in, so we'll keep up with that. But they've got this portable class library, and what happens is you can create a class, and you can indicate what platforms you're building that class for. You can include versions of the .NET framework. You can include versions of Silverlight. You can include Windows 8 Metro applications. And you can include versions of Windows Phone. And I believe you can also include versions of Xbox. And so what happens is, based on the versions you select, it'll find the lowest common denominator of functionality that's supported. Well, what's key about that is one of the reasons I believe developers fell so much in love with Silverlight and WPF was because of XAML and data binding. It provided this incredible way to separate the design and developer workflow, but to also create pretty intensive testable units of code that didn't have to spin up a UI or use something as brittle as coded UI type testing to test through that. And so this whole notion of data binding is key. And it turns out that the APIs that support data binding, notify property change, iCommand, all of these APIs are actually part of those lower common denominators. And so I've got examples where I've built a view model that represents code and behavior. So it provides a text label, and there's a command where you can click a button and then it disables it and so forth. That's in a class that's done using the portable class library. What's unique about that class is, without recompiling it, I can reference it from a Silverlight application, I can reference it from a WPF application, and I can reference it from a Windows Metro application. I'm pretty sure I could reference it from a Windows Phone application, I just haven't tested that functionality yet. So what this does is, because Windows 8 is not released yet, it gives developers today a path for the future. And, I'm surprised that more people aren't focused on this, but it allows me to build a significant amount of code that maybe today lives in a Silverlight or WPF or Windows Phone application, but tomorrow for release when it's ready can be integrated into that Metro application with minimal effort. So that's the first, I think, very important change that really speaks to the state of Silverlight and WPF. The second piece is the continued support for C# and XAML in Metro. And I've got a talk coming up where I'm covering some of the top features I think developers will love about Windows 8 applications. And one of those is XAML. And what I show is, I create a button in a Windows 8 Metro application, and it's a Metro style. So it's got the very, flat, there's no 3D gradients, anything like that. And we've got that flat style of a button. Then I literally search on Silverlight for the definition of the template for a button. And if you remember, the default buttons from Silverlight have these gradients, and they're kind of 3D and raised up. And I copy that template straight into the Metro application. And I have to do some search and replace because of a namespace for the Visual State Manager, which is a feature of XAML. But besides that search and replace, it completely restyles the button as a Silverlight looking button. Now what's, who cares? Why would I even do that? Well, the important thing is, even though there's not 100% parity between the XAML and Metro and the XAML that we're used to in Silverlight and WPF, there's enough that there's plenty of overlap. Styles are still styles. You still have data sources. You have all of these features and bindings that you're used to working with. And in a lot of cases, you can just move it over directly. And the second important thing is, all those skills that we developed in understanding XAML and understanding data binding, those don't go away. They're preserved in that Metro C# experience. So I'm very excited about that. I found out that when I moved to developing Metro applications, I had to learn about the environment that they were running in, because it's a different environment, and I had to learn about the different APIs, but I didn't have to learn how to program a new language, and I didn't have to learn how to design a new UI. In fact, the new version of Visual Studio has Blend, which is a tool a lot of Silverlight and WPF developers love. Blend is integrated right into Visual Studio, the same engine and pieces of that for styling your Metro applications, and that's pretty exciting.
Now, when you say Blend is integrated into Visual Studio, can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. So in the previous version of Visual Studio, we had a separate tool called Blend, which was this really neat tool. You can, you know, basically what you see is what you get, layout controls. It provides a nice interface for understanding how you want to position grids and if you want elements to stretch to fill space. I mean, there's just a lot of functionality there. Another thing with animations, being able to record your animation. So all those were pieces of Blend and sort of crossed a boundary between casual development and intensive design of the user experience for an application. Well, in Visual Studio, we had a code name Cider Designer. That was the code name for it. And it had some quirks with it. It didn't behave the same way as Blend at all. It would, for the most part, render things in a similar way, but it was nowhere near as easy or intuitive to work with. And intuitive might be an overloaded term just because I've worked with Blend so much. But the other little nuance of Cider was it ran under kind of a different runtime than the Blend. So things would behave differently one over the other. So what happened with the new version of Visual Studio is there's still a standalone Blend product, and this is the designer-focused product. So all the heavy animations and things you'd expect a designer to do are in that tool. But the simple things that some of the developers who have design skills may be using, for example, you know, when I spin up a new page, maybe I'm not designing all the fluid animations, but I'm certainly laying out elements of the page and grabbing assets and moving them onto the page. All of those components are integrated in the designer, and it uses a portion of the same runtime. So there's parity between the interface and the behavior of Blend and the designer in Visual Studio.
So do you find yourself actually keeping both applications open? I know that when I was looking at building Windows Phone applications, I often had Blend and Visual Studio open to the same solution. Is that a pattern that continues, or now with the integration you're talking about, it's less necessary?
Yeah, with the integration I'm talking about, it's less necessary. I find myself going to Blend for doing things like handling storyboarding. So if I want to record an animation, instead of doing the old notepad way that we used to build websites and try to do all the animations in XAML, Blend has a phenomenal interface for taking a property, saying, okay, there's the starting point. Then you move it, rotate it, change the color, do whatever you want. That's the ending point. And then it fills in the gaps and says, okay, this is how the animation gets from A to B. So that's nice. But outside of that, for most of my general layout and positioning and styling, I'm doing all of that within Visual Studio now.
So that's a significant change to have your styling being done inside Visual Studio.
Yes, it seems to me, and I couldn't, you know, back it up with scientific numbers, but it appears that the design experience is far more consistent. We get a beautiful display. In fact, when you're designing a Metro application, you can even set it up so you get the outline of the tablet that you're designing for, so you can get a sense of how those elements are going to lay out. Another thing it'll do that you could not do in the previous version is it will play animations, and you can highlight different elements within XAML and have them appear and disappear in the designer. So it is a far richer experience.
Now, when you say in previous versions, has there been a difference as we move from consumer preview to the release preview, or is this more a difference between 12 and 10?
So this is a difference between 12 and 10. So within the release preview, the initial release of Blend was actually Blend for JavaScript only, which had a lot of gnashing of teeth. People were saying, oh my gosh, it's only for HTML and JavaScript. What about XAML? But they've since released full support for XAML. So the significant changes came between Visual Studio 2010, which had no Blend integration whatsoever in the core engine, to now 11 beta and what is now 2012, it is that integration. So that's where we saw the change, that jump between the two.
Got it. Now, you talked about doing an upcoming presentation. Is that at CodeStock, or are you talking about something different?
Yes. So CodeStock is a great conference. I started going to that conference a few years back, and I've just watched it grown even in the past few years. It's in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I can provide a link to that as well. But I will be going there next week. So it's a Friday and Saturday conference. I believe it's the 15th and the 16th, if I don't have a calendar in front of me. But I'll be doing two talks there. So one talk focuses on what I call the top 10 features of development in Windows 8 that developers are going to love. So I think there's just some phenomenal features that people should get excited about. So I'll be covering those and doing some live code demonstration of that. The other talk ties into what we discussed earlier about that portable class library. And I'm talking about modern NVVM development. So if you asked me about NVVM 2 years ago, I'd say, well, this is something tied to XAML, and it's what we do in Silverlight and WPF, and it had a narrower focus. But I think a lot of people have discovered how powerful this concept of data binding can be, and the idea of having this view model that synchronizes state. So what we see is NVVM is now available through the Windows Phone, through Silverlight, through WPF on the desktop, through Metro. This entire new set of applications that are coming out are fully supportive of the pattern, but we're seeing it on the web as well. And that's amazing to me. And when I first saw that notion, I said, oh, here we go, you know, square peg, round hole. Someone likes the pattern, they're trying to force it. But then when I started working with it and seeing the examples and seeing what was possible, I got really excited about what can be done. So this talk will be focused on how it crosses those disciplines and what's in common across the board with what you can achieve using that pattern.
Is that where we see libraries like Knockout.js and so forth?
That's absolutely correct. And part of what I'm doing is I'll talk about those libraries that are available, but even something that's as ubiquitous as jQuery can achieve data binding. And I've got an example that I show where you have this nice HTML markup, and then you have a model, if you will, that can be returned from a controller in MVC. So you can spin up and get your object, which, let's say it's a contact record. So it can be returned as JSON. And then you can execute just a few elegant statements and wire it into your form just like that.
When you were on last time, you were talking about the Sterling database. Does that have life in after Metro?
I believe it does, and this is something that I've been asked about time and time again. So there's a few steps that Sterling needs to take, and one of the things I'm looking for is developers to volunteer to be on that project to help out, because I've taken on so much with the book writing and talking, and I still have a full-time job, and I have a family, so the time's just not there. But the existing versions of Sterling, there's a few improvements we're looking to make, but when we talk about Metro specifically, one of the challenges when Metro came out was the same challenge that induced me to write Sterling when Silverlight came out. There was no local database. And so when I wrote Sterling, the entire goal behind Sterling is not to compete with a full transactional database, relational database. It's not intended to hold a million rows. It's intended to be a lightweight, easy way to serialize and query data locally on the client. And so that may be a cache, it may be actual data for the application, but it's meant to be lightweight. It uses link to objects. And the whole notion is, instead of having to do a lot of fancy things like decorating classes with attributes and calling special serializers, it should be pretty easy for me to save something and retrieve it from my local cache. So in that respect, I see it living in Metro. There's definitely a need in Metro, and there's been some recent announcements about SQLite And that is a powerful tool for doing relational database. And if you need to do something relational, I never recommend Sterling. What Sterling shines at is handling complex object graphs. So when you need to serialize something that has children or unexpected types or image data, binary data, things that normally just don't fit well in a lightweight relational database, that's where Sterling shines. So I'm looking at Metro. I've got to carve out time to do it. And probably one of the biggest decisions I'm making right now is the determination of how it's going to be exposed. Is it going to be a Windows runtime component, which comes with some caveats because then it has to be able to handle all of the different programming languages and it will be a little more restrictive? Or do I simply focus on .NET applications, in other words, C# and VB applications, using it as a project? Because one of the aspects of Windows 8 Metro applications is you can write them in JavaScript, which takes on a dependency to the JavaScript engine. You can write them in C++, which generates pretty much unmanaged code. It's managed within the context of Metro, but it doesn't require the .NET framework. If you write C# or VB code, you have to spin up a version of the .NET framework. And I say a version because it's a minimized profile is what they call it. It's not the full-blown one you would see on the desktop. But that framework does come into play because it is actual managed code that you're building. So if I build Sterling as a C# application, any application that would use it would also need to take on a dependency to that .NET framework profile. So I'm sort of sorting through all those nuances right now and figuring out what makes the most sense.
Before I let you go, what kinds of Metro applications do you see showing up in the early days? What kinds of applications should folks be thinking about building? Where are the opportunities?
You know, I think we've got a very well-established casual market, and that's the consumer side. And this is where I find, you know, with Windows 8, I love using it in the desktop to develop. But when I walk out of my office, I'm bringing my tablet with me. And so for casual browsing of news articles, social media, checking email, watching movies, all of those aspects are very fun, easy-to-use aspects. I think those types of applications, we know what they look like. They've been out there from competing products, and so it's a question of bringing them to the platform. Where I see innovation happening is what we started to see with Silverlight. I mean, one of the motivations for writing my Designing Silverlight Business Applications book was I saw Silverlight moving into the enterprise and addressing a lot of concerns where, for example, in a large furniture room, furniture warehouse, the salesperson wants to have something that they can bring with them and very easily navigate through the catalog or even show catalog items to the customer and let them design their own room and make it real easy without having to go to a kiosk or wait in line or lose that connection. So where I see touch being important is in those high touch interactions where it's people interacting with each other, whether it's in a sales venue, whether it's people who are out in the field doing work. So what I see the real, I guess, niche, unique opportunity for Windows 8 is reimagining how we make it easy for people to be productive in their jobs with something that's lightweight and easy to carry around with them. Because I think that, you know, people look at that Metro interface and they say, well, X and Y Z business application will never work that way. And the reality is there are going to be certain applications that need the keyboard. I can't imagine writing software just on a touch tablet. It wouldn't be practical. I want my keyboard. But there's other things I think that if we rethink about the way we do them, we can make a very nice, easy, touch-friendly interface that someone can carry that tablet and be very productive in a fast way. And those are the applications that are going to make the difference. And we're already seeing it at Winelect, where we had customers ask us to take Silverlight applications and touch enable them and bring them onto the tablets. So now what we're seeing is those same customers and new ones bringing that experience onto the Windows 8 platform. And there's a lot of different industries. I gave the example of the salesperson on the showroom floor. Another great example is hospitals, right? So you've got nurses and doctors doing their rounds, and they don't need to sit there there and perform heavy data entry, but they need to provide status updates and navigate and find information. So I think there's a rich market for those types of tailored applications that just re-engineer the way people interact with these and make it very easy, light touch, and portable.